Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith. Hey everybody, what's up? Chad Wesley Smith here, bringing you another episode of the Jug Life Podcast. I'm joined, as always, by marvelous Max Montana. How you doing, bud?
Doing pretty well.
And we are here at UCLA, joined by Director of Football Performance, Frank Wintrick. Frank, thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, it's great to have you guys here. Welcome.
Thanks.
So we've gotten to spend the last couple hours here watching UCLA football team train and see their incredible facility. And, I mean, the whole thing has just been really, really impressive. The precision and the organization of everything, incredibly thoughtful processes. UCLA football fans should be very excited about what's going on. So, you know, congrats on that, because I know you've only been here a short time.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you. And we've got a great facility here, and we're very proud of that. But I like to focus more on the people. You know, I like to tell people when they walk in, we have recruits come in, and they say, oh, man, what a great facility. Or donors come in, what a great facility. Like, yeah, but that 55-pound plate weighs the same here as it does in Tuscaloosa. It weighs the same as it does in Eugene. What separates the great programs is what you do with it. And I've got the best people in the business, Kevin Heiberger, Chris Ronald, Vince Croce, Dante Wilkins, Mark Cleary, and Sam Kavarsky, the coaches who work with me every day and help us build this thing and really gave you the opportunity to see what you saw today. Those guys really make this thing go. And so I'm lucky to have really good people around me, and those were what drives this whole thing.
Can you tell us a little bit about your path to this current job?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm from St. Petersburg, Florida, originally, and I went to Kentucky Wesleyan College in Owensboro, Kentucky, played Division II football, got my degree there, and I got my first job at Hardin-Simmons University, a little Division III school out in Abilene, Texas. That summer, I had an opportunity to intern with Joe Ken at Arizona State, and was fortunate enough to get offered a full-time job off that internship. So that was kind of the big jump for me, going from Division III to the Pac-10 at the time. Was an assistant, full-time assistant there for a year, and then had the opportunity to leave with Mark Uyama and go to Utah State with him for 2 years. Went to University of South Florida with Ron McKeefrey for about 4 months as a graduate assistant, and then got the head job at the Citadel. I was there for 2 years.
Oh, nice.
And then left the Citadel and went back to South Florida. Was there for 3 years as the associate director. And then got the head job at University of North Texas with Dan McCarney and was there for 4 years. And then had an opportunity to join Bronco Mendenhall at BYU. I was there for 11 months before he took the Virginia job. He brought me with him to Virginia, was there at Virginia for 2 years. And then this past December, Coach Kelly came calling and had the opportunity to come out here to UCLA. And it was just an opportunity that I couldn't pass up at a tremendous institution, both academically and athletically, with a coach who just really gets it. You know, if you're a performance coach and a science and data-driven performance coach, to me there really isn't a better head coach to work for than Chip Kelly. He's a guy that really gets it. He believes in the integration of science, and he wants science over tradition, which is what we are all about. We really, over the last 12 years, have cast a lot of the traditional strength and conditioning philosophies aside and have gone more towards what the science says and what does the data say and what does the research say, and gotten away from the emotional ties that you have to lifts and different exercises and those kinds of things, and gone with what proved, A, that it worked, and B, kept the athletes healthy. And based off of that, I think that we've earned an opportunity to work with really one of the top football coaches in all of college football.
Awesome. I didn't. There's a lot of people I know in your coaching lineage know well and respect. I mean, House is great. Uwe is awesome. Ron McKeefrey, I've gotten to do a podcast with him before, and was Donald Boucher at Citadel.
He was my GA. So yeah, he took over for me when I left. So and he's done an absolutely phenomenal job. I'm always inspired when I look back at what Donnell has done there, and really proud that he's taken that thing and gone the way he has with it.
Yeah, I've trained in that Citadel weight room several times, as one of my best friends lives in Charleston. Great place. So today we got to see, you know, from your freshman group doing one thing, and then the upperclassmen, you know, with their individual coaches, and I think a very unique structure with four separate, correct? Four?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, four separate kind of autonomous strength coaches. But looking at that freshman group, you know, if there's probably people listening who work with high school athletes, what could those high school football coaches and you know, private performance coaches and stuff do to make your job easier, really, yeah. and deliver you more prepared high school football players?
Yeah, I love that question. I love that platform. Coach gave us the opportunity to speak with some high school coaches a couple weeks ago, and man, one of the things I'm really passionate about in this field is changing the world through what we're doing here, and really imagining a world in performance where our athletes are not hampered by injuries that are suffered in these rooms across the country. And unfortunately, when you start looking at the training process across the country, in high school, junior high, college, but it starts in the junior high levels, where athletes are being asked to do things that their bodies are not prepared for. And then that just compounds in the high school level, which then compounds even more at the college level. And then we're seeing a lot of overuse injuries and a lot of fatigue-based injuries that are starting to happen, and it's carrying over into professional sport. And I would love to be able to create a platform where we could talk to the high school coaches and say, you don't have to set world records in the weight room with your junior high and high school kids. What you need to do is methodically and intelligently develop a plan to prepare them for the next step in their athletic career. There's a big push right now in athletics for multi-sport athletes. You know, that was some of the things that I think we're seeing that we were getting away from, and I think that there's more light being shed on that, and I think that that's really important, because too often now kids are being put just in one sport. You know, he's 5 years old, he's going to be a basketball player, he's going to play basketball year-round, and by the time he's 16, that kid is so sick and tired of basketball and all the crap that goes with being a basketball player, he's done. He doesn't want to play high school, let alone go on to college and do it. And we're seeing that throughout all the sports. And so I think it would be really great if our high school coaches understood basics first, and that's what we've done here. I was able, when I was at University of North Texas, to work closely with the Baylor staff and Jeremy Hefner there, who worked with the women's basketball team for a long time with a lot of their national championship run and is a brilliant strength coach, introduced us to the theory of regression and said, well, where do you want the athletes to be 4 years from now, 5 years from now? Regress everything back to its most basic modality and start there. Because the reality is, you come in the room and you could say, well, everybody knows how to squat, everybody knows how to bench, everybody knows how to clean. The truth of the matter is, they don't really know how to do it properly. And you can make that assumption, but then you would be wrong. And so what we found is, well, let's not squat them, let's just front squat them, or let's just kettlebell squat them, or let's just goblet squat them. And every time we've done that, we've said, oh, you know what, we could even regress this back a little bit further. So now we've really managed to take it to the extreme where when our freshmen come in, everything we do the first 4 weeks they're here is body weight, and it's just GPP, general physical preparedness, where we're teaching them the basic movement patterns that we want them to learn and master over the course of the next 5 years. So the squat pattern that we teach body weight is the exact same squat pattern that they're going to learn in the elite program, or not learn, but utilize the elite program when we're doing dynamic effort squats, potentially against bands or potentially against chains or whatever that's going to look like in their program. What we want to do is lay those foundational movements early on. And a lot of things that we've been able to find is we've been able to find and correct issues with the athletes early on. And maybe it's a joint issue, maybe it's a muscle issue, but we're able to identify those things early on before we really load the athlete. And then those things start becoming a problem where the athlete then has an issue or something down the road, which then it becomes a surgery or it becomes something where we've got to shut them down for a long period of time to correct that problem.
We had the chance to go in the training hall, the training room, and see you guys started out your meeting there with something that was kind of interesting to me. You had everybody stop and lean back in their chairs, close their eyes, and then do some breathing stuff. Can you elaborate on kind of what that's about or where you started with that?
Yeah, so we're partnered with a company called First Beat, and they're headquartered out of Finland. And we wanted to ensure that we were understanding what was going on internally with our athletes. So there's nobody better in the country at utilizing Catapult GPS data than us. We have the head coach that started it in college football with Chip Kelly, and then Chris Ronald, who oversees that part of our operation here, was part of the first team to use it in the NFL with the Jacksonville Jaguars. University of Kentucky, he was the director there of the sports science department when they were utilizing it there under Eric Corum. So we do that better than anybody in the country. So we know exactly what the external load of our athletes is. But how do we know what's going on internally with them? How do we know how that load is affecting their heart? How is that affecting their nervous system? So one of the things that this system through First Beat offers is what's called a QRT, a quick reaction or a quick recovery test. So it's a 3-minute test. We just turn the lights off. We just have the guys just relax and shut down. There's no cell phones. There's no music. We just want them to turn off for 3 minutes. We teach them some diaphragmatic breathing techniques to where they just calm down. And what it does is it gives us a good parasympathetic tone and kind of shows us how their bodies are recovering. And one bad test isn't necessarily a red flag, but a couple bad tests back to back show us that maybe there's something going on with that kid that we need to have a conversation about. And so that's a great way for us to demonstrate. And we talked about earlier, we high-low sequence all of our training. So after all of our low days, our recovery days, we bring the guys back in, and that'll be the first thing that we do in the morning is that quick recovery test and just see how their bodies are recovering off of the low day.
Right.
So you got the technology like First Beat. And you talked about the Catapult GPS stuff. What are some other technology pieces that you think that can be really useful in a setting like this? I think there's probably some unique challenges to it because you're dealing with 100 mm-hmm. guys rather than coaching one person looking at their own training or something, but some of the technology that you find really useful here.
Yeah, there's so much great stuff out there now, and you got to be careful of the trap. Mm-hmm. And then you find something that's really cool. You're like, man, we really want to do this. But like you said, we've got over 100 athletes. So how do you utilize this with 100 athletes? And then you can collect data, but what are you going to do with the data? That's always our question. Like when people come through and they show us stuff, my first question is, how are we going to use this? Like, this is great, but how are we going to use this piece of information or the 600 pieces of information that this is going to get from us? One thing that you didn't get a chance to look at today, we're also using force plate technology through Sparta. Sparta does a great job of singling out 3 pieces of information that help us. That force plate tracks hundreds of pieces of data every time that you jump a kid. They're going to look at 3 different pieces of data that are going to help us really hone in on exactly what that's showing us. Catapult's the same thing. When you run a catapult report, there's over, I think, 500 or 600 different pieces of data that are coming out of that. So which pieces of information are the most relevant to help us, A, improve our performance, but B, most importantly, keep our athletes on the field for game days? And that's what we're looking for. So tech-wise, we are using First Beat. We're the only team in American collegiate football that's utilizing real-time heart rate technology. We're utilizing Catapult, and a lot of people are utilizing Catapult right now, but I would challenge you to find anybody who's utilizing it better because of our head coach and because of the staff that we have here. And then we're also utilizing the Sparta force plate technology.
The force plate one, I think that's probably what we did at Cal.
We did at Cal, yeah.
So they're measuring, what is it, load?
Load, explode, and drive.
Yes, yes.
Which is neat.
I hopped on that there, on that force plate as well. All of our women's weightlifters beat me quite handedly.
Yeah.
But my graph was way different looking than all theirs. that was a fun one.
And then the velocity-based training technology. We're pairing with Tendo right now to get the Tendo units here so we can track bar speed and power outputs. And those are the things. It's easy to get mired in technology. You can drown in all that tech if you're not careful. And what we want to do is make sure that everything that we do technology-wise is deliberate and purposeful, and we can explain it to our athletes. The worst thing that can happen is our kids come in and they feel like lab rats. They're being poked and prodded all the time. We share all of our data with our athletes, and we want that to be an open forum. So if we track something, we share it with them and show them what it is. We send it to them in their emails, or we present it in a team setting so they can look at and see what we're tracking, why we're tracking it, and how it's going to help them. So that they have a really clear understanding of what it is that we're doing, because they are a part of the process. They are the process, and we want to make sure that they understand exactly what's going on so that they can give us feedback so we can help serve them better.
So with all that great technology in there, amazing, beautiful weight room, a lot of nice looking Alico bumpers, but you're not using those for any snatches or clean and jerks.
No, we're not.
So tell us what why you're making that decision and how it kind of relates to developing speed and power for these powerful athletes.
Yeah, so this is probably where about half of those 40,000 people are going to turn their turn their podcast off. They don't Olympic lift, what? It's funny, a couple years ago when I was first at North Texas, Kevin and I spoke at a at a high school clinic. And when I got to the point of my talk when I said I don't Olympic lift, about half the people in the room got up and left. So now I put that at the beginning of the talk. So
don't waste your time.
If you're going to leave, go ahead and leave right now. We don't do that. It's interesting, though, because since we've pulled that, and man, that came from listening to Buddy Morris and Tom Mislinski and James Smith talk, you know, about 10 years ago, they were started talking about pulling away from that. And we've always been very technically motivated, technically driven coaches. We want the athletes to perform the movements right, because it's our belief if you don't perform the movements right, you're not going to get the most out of them. And so we've always been very strong on the technique side, and we've always beaten our heads against the wall. Why? They can't extend their hips. They can't get up underneath the bar properly. Even your guys that can do it really well, or gals that can do it really well, they're not your best athletes. And so you start looking at it saying, well what's the cause for all this? And then here comes Buddy Morris and Milo and James, and they say, well, we don't do those things. And it's like, wait a minute, hold on. Maybe this is the answer to what our problems are and what we're looking for. And so we have gotten away from them. We've gotten completely away from them. And there's a number of reasons for that. One, they're extremely difficult to teach, especially in a large team setting. They're extremely difficult for the athlete to learn, especially in a large team setting. To that end, you're asking an athlete to master a neurologically demanding task that doesn't support their primary neurologically demanding task. And in this environment, the primary task is the game of football. And so our belief is either you're going to be a good Olympic lifter and a lousy football player, or vice versa. Either one of those is bad for me as a strength and conditioning coach, because if you're a lousy Olympic lifter and a good football player and you get hurt during the Olympic lifts, then I got to go up to the head coach's office and explain why the star XYZ player is out, because I had to show him catching a clean, or I had to show him catching a snatch. If they're a lousy football player but a good Olympic lifter, we're not going to win very many games, and there'll be someone else sitting here having this conversation in a couple years. And so what we want to do is find the very best means that we can, and James Smith wrote a great article or pamphlet on classifying the means. And so we don't want to look so much at exercises, but means of training. And so we want to find the very best means that we can that provide the most benefit for our athletes while simultaneously providing the least amount of risk of injury. And so the injury thing to me is one of those things that we cannot, we absolutely have proven over the last 10 years. So we have not lost an athlete in competition to soft tissue injury in the last 10 years. So quad pulls, hamstring pulls, those kinds of things. After 2 years in the program, we've basically eliminated labrum tears, non-contact ACLs, those kinds of things, low back disc injuries, cervical spine injuries, those types of things that have been eliminated. And I think a lot of that comes from, and one thing that we can't quantify is microtrauma from those lifts. And particularly in the sport of football, it's a very traumatic game. Every practice, every hit is like a car accident. So why during the off season are we going to subject the athletes to multiple car accidents, basically? And if they're not doing it right, that's an issue, because they're going to cause problems. And even if they are doing it right, there is a high risk of injury. I remember this 2006, I think, I was at the Citadel and I went and did the USAW course, and the instructor came in and he had a cast on his wrist, and he gave this whole powerful speech about, if you are a strength coach and you don't teach the Olympic lifts because you say they're hard to teach or they're dangerous or they're hard for the athletes to learn, you're a lazy coach. And that's pretty powerful. I don't want to be a lazy coach, so I kind of perked up my attention. And throughout the course of the thing, I asked him how he broke his wrist. Now, this is a guy with 20 plus years experience as a competitive weightlifter, and he broke his wrist catching a clean. So it doesn't matter how good you are at it, there is a very high risk of that happening. So what if we eliminate that risk and then introduce things where the athlete can produce force into the ground and do it at a very high rate, but at a much using much safer movements? So let's just take the movements that they've already learned, their squats, their presses, their pulls, and now just execute those with a submaximal load, generating as much force as possible. And then utilizing the technology like the Tendo unit, what we're able to do is demonstrate them expressing power, expressing speed, and then through velocity-based training, what we're able to do is basically graph a force-velocity curve and demonstrate if that athlete is improving in strength without necessarily having to always test one repetition maximums. And so there's a lot of things that we've done in the past and that we are working towards now that are going to reduce that orthopedic stress for the athletes while at the same time enhancing their performance out in the field in a much safer way.
There's so much good info in there in regards to exercise selection for sport, and going back to what you talked about with the work the freshmen are doing, all this progression and regression. I think strength coaches, particularly strength coaches who have a background competing in a strength sport, weightlifting, powerlifting, strongman, they get so married to wanting to make football players into powerlifters, mm-hmm. or football players into weightlifters, or football players into strongmen, without thinking like, well, there's no barbells out there, there's no tires to flip, in a football game, and that they fail to understand that all of these movements need to exist, one to transfer to the sporting movement, but also like within this progression and regression that high bar ass to grass squats, like those are great, but if you can't do them right, they're not great. They're just going to really compound problems that you're having. So I definitely appreciate the thinking towards that. And with the weightlifting stuff, I remember watching that. It was a really old Elite FTS interview with Buddy and Tom Mislinski, and they're talking about why they didn't use the Olympic lifts, and that really resonated with me. I must have been 19 years old watching that and decided to make that decision for my own training, throwing the shot put. And so it's a lot of the same stuff you're saying. My wrists hurt, my elbows hurt, my shoulders hurt, and I needed those to be healthy to throw a ball far. I didn't have to do snatches and cleans. So take that, Max.
That's true. That's very true.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it is this fallacious thinking of, well, weightlifters are explosive, so doing weightlifting will make me explosive. And the people that are known for being great weightlifters, whether it's Dmitry Klokov or Piros Dimas or something, like they were explosive when they were born. That's the reason they're known. That's the reason they were the best weightlifters. The weightlifting didn't make them that way. It would be like akin to saying that, well, playing basketball makes you tall. Or throwing the shot put. Shot putters are incredibly explosive, but no strength coach would ever think, let me teach all my football players how to throw the shot put so they can become more explosive, because it's a whole another sport. And in regards to it being difficult to teach, Max coaches plenty of people who that's all they do 6 days a week,
it's still hard.
7 days a week, and they still do it wrong sometimes. So,
it's a good point. I remember that the James's whole classification too. When I saw that, he showed me the general specific and specific. Suddenly gives you this great perspective for anyone who doesn't understand maybe like that doing something in the weight room doesn't necessarily transfer directly to the sport. This idea that there's a spectrum of exercises that has increasingly more transfer to the activity, and you're talking about weightlifting or powerlifting, right? Might have sets of 10 in the high bar back squatter are general or general specific in nature to powerlifting. If that is that far removed in a sport like powerlifting where it's super simple, then what the hell does a clean really do for someone who's playing football, right?
Yeah, and I always get a kick out of social media, and you watch people, they'll show a guy in perfect triple extension on a clean, and then show a guy like just absolutely squaring a guy up for a perfect 45-degree tackle where he's fully triple extended, or a sprinter coming out of a block at a 45-degree angle, one knee up, and then they'll put something like sports specificity, and it's like, well, that's a person that has no idea what they're talking about, because there's nothing sports specific about either of those things to what they're comparing it to.
Exactly.
And so there's a lot of faux science that exists, and one of the things that we like to say here is that because of the internet and because of the amount of information that's out there, there is a wealth of information out there, but there is a real lack of knowledge, particularly in this field, because really anybody can do it. You just flip on the YouTube, and even here we get a lot of people that come through and train, their superstar clients, and we watch a lot of the stuff that goes on, and you're like, holy cow, like, wow.
Wait, so you're saying that everything on the internet is not true.
Believe it or not, yes. Believe it or not, yes.
Damn.
But I think that if we go back and really look, and we had this conversation earlier today when we were having this discussion about the Olympic lifts, go back and look at the way the Soviets trained their weightlifters. What did they do in their off season? They didn't weightlift year round. They played games, they downhill skied, they played volleyball, they ran in the woods and did all kinds of crazy stuff, jumping over trees and doing handstands in the woods and the forest in their GPP phase. And then when they were in more of their SPP phase, and they were doing sprints and jumps and medicine ball throws, they were doing squats and presses and pulls and leg extensions. They had special machines developed, and only as they got closer to their real sport did then they actually start. And then you start looking at movements like the hang clean, the hang snatch, the power shrug. Where did those things come from? Well, those were special exercises developed by those coaches to train different aspects. Louis did the exact same thing with the two board, with board pressing and with different squat bars. Well, a safety bar squat bar is designed to help the athlete get better at the back squat, or a board press is designed to get the athlete better at the bench press by stressing different parts of it. The Olympic variations are the same thing. It's the same concept. Louis just took that concept and applied it to powerlifting. What we want to do is get rid of that part of it, because it has nothing to do with helping us in our sport. In fact, my belief is more and more that I'm doing this, it's actually a hindrance to the athlete, because I think that we are setting our athletes up for injury. I believe that we're setting our athletes up for failure in the long run by some of these things that we're asking them to do. And that's why we've made a decision to get away from them. Our numbers, our testing numbers, we compare our guys the last 15 years of the NFL Combine. Our bell curve fits exactly with the athletes of the NFL Combine. So the majority of our guys fit right in the middle. We'll have some guys that are exceptional. We'll have some guys that are not very good. But we are not holistically behind where the top athletes that are coming out of college are in our sprints, our jumps, or our throws. And so and our injuries are down. Last year at Virginia, we went into our bowl game with 21 out of 22 starters from game one. The year before, we had the lowest incident of injury they've had there in 15 years. And so the system has proven that it works. And again, we take our ego out of the equation and really just look at what is best for the athlete. Because then even with that, you say, well, we're going to be a, maybe you're not an Olympic-based team, maybe you're going to be a powerlifting-based team. We're going to squat, bench, and pull. What if you get a kid with a spondy? And I've had kids transfer into schools before where they come from these great strength programs. A kid's got a spondy, and his great strength coach was cleaning him and squatting him with a spondy. And it's like, that's a ticking time bomb. You're just waiting for that to get worse, and then that kid's not going to be able to play at all anymore. Why wouldn't you, again, take your ego out of it? Classification of the means.
Right.
Put them on a pitch shark. Put them on some other piece of equipment. You can elicit the same training effect without having to have the same amount of risk. And so really, we just want to find the best way with the least amount of risk of injury for our athletes to get them ready for game day.
Excellent.
Yeah, so yeah, watching the warm-ups and just watching everything about your team's behavior, and you had said that, remarked that this wasn't even that good of a day. But I was very impressed, you know, seeing just very precise focus. They're cheering each other on through everything. And all that comes back to team culture. Mm-hmm. And you guys are obviously very actively developing that. Can you tell us some of the things that you really, you know, hold in high regard in terms of what the team, you know, what you're trying to accomplish in here to build that team culture?
Yeah, so it starts with discipline. And as you got the chance to watch our ready prep, which is what we call our warm-up, everything we do is done on command. And that's the very first thing that we do on the day. So if they're not able to successfully make it through the ready prep, then they don't move on. And so today, fortunately, they were dialed in. There was only one time that we had to go back and do something again. But, you know, we say in our program, there's two ways to do things, the right way and again. And if they don't do it the right way, then there's not a lot of screaming and yelling and drama. It's just go back and we'll do it again until you get it right. And then when you've demonstrated that you can get it right, you can move on. But we've had great relationships with our nation's warriors. One of my great mentors, was a Marine in the Force Recon community, and taught me about discipline, which is the instant willingness, obedience to all instruction, respect for authority, and self-reliance. That instant willingness part is at the very heart of our discipline and the way we warm up our guys. So everything you saw today was done on command. It was done exactly all together. Well, what does that have to do with football? What does that have to do with building a team culture? Well, it has everything to do with football, because if on the snap, three guys go and four guys stay still, well, you don't have a very good play going. Same thing on the other side of the ball. If the other side isn't ready, or they're getting the call and they're not passing the call along properly or not reacting properly, then you don't have a very good play, and then you end up getting beat on that play. And so we want our guys to learn how to listen to a command and react instantly without having any thought, any, well, I need to do this or I need to do that. We're teaching them to be disciplined through that. It also teaches them to work together, just like military drill. And even before you go into special forces or BUDS training or any of those things, you got to go through basic. What do they teach you how to do in basic? They teach you how to line up in a straight line. They teach you how to march in step. Well, what does that have to do with fighting a war? Well, back in the 1700s, that's how they would fight. But nowadays, why do they still teach that? Why is it still important? Because it is a very grassroots level of discipline and team cohesion working together. When someone says move and everybody moves all together, well, now you've worked together as a team. Same thing exists on the football field. When everybody gets the call, and the ball is snapped, and everybody does the exact same thing together, you have a successful play. And a lot of times, and Coach says this, and I love it, even if we're wrong, but at least we're all wrong together, right, we can make a play work. And so getting the guys to work together as a team and move together as a team is really at the heart of what we're trying to do. And then one of the things that you alluded to was energy. We want the guys to be highly involved and engaged with each other. There should never be a day where people are just standing around watching. We want them talking to each other. What happens when you talk? You exhale, which means you're breathing, which means you're going to inhale again. And so that teaches our guys part of our breathing. We do a lot with diaphragmatic breathing with our guys. We do a lot of breathing exercise with our guys to teach them to drive their heart rates down when they're excited or elevated. But the more they're talking, the more they're breathing, the more they're breathing out, which is forcing and driving their heart rate down, which is what we're trying to do with those guys and again, keep them engaged. Anytime we do a hard training session, which there are usually three very challenging training sessions a week for our guys in our high-low sequence, we want them to come together and really push and challenge each other on those. Because if during that session I go inside, which means I just start focusing on myself, and you do that and you do that, and all of a sudden we've got 30 guys that are all standing there just worried about themselves, we're not going to be very successful. But if, as I start to fatigue, I focus my attention on you, you focus your attention on him, he focuses attention on me, and now I don't even feel like I'm tired anymore because I'm now focused on you. And you don't want to let me down because you know I'm watching you, and you don't want to let him down because he's watching you, and you don't want to let me down because you're cheering me on, and now all of a sudden, you've just put some chips on the table because you're like, come on, man, you're better than that, let's go. Well, now you better not fall off because right, you just, right. Like I said, you put some chips down. Now all of a sudden, we're bringing the culture up all together. And that doesn't necessarily have to exist in a football culture. That can exist in any gym culture or any culture, period, a family culture. You want people that are communicating openly with each other. You want people that are cheering for each other and invested not just in their own success, but the success of those people around them. And that's one of the things that we're really trying to get the guys to buy into is, look, he may be your backup, and he might eventually replace you one day, but you know what would be really good is if he was able to come in and give you a blow during practice and give you a blow during games so that you could play your very best snaps when you need to play your very best snaps and you're not at the end of the game just completely gassed. And so really investing in each other as opposed to just saying, well, I'm just doing this for me, has helped us everywhere we've been create really unique and powerful cultures with our athletes.
Another piece that you were talking about right before we started to record was I think, you know, summarizes a lot of your ideas and a lot of what UCLA football and UCLA, you know, the performance side of things is about, is this logo. Mm-hmm. And if you could sort of talk us through what this means, why it's more than just, you know, a badass looking logo.
Yeah, so yeah. Again, one of my great mentors was in the force reconnaissance community, and they have an emblem called the Recon Jack. And if you ever met a Force Recon Marine, you probably saw it tattooed on his bicep or his back somewhere. But the emblem is basically like a jack of all trades. And so for us, we kind of took that same approach with this. And everywhere we've been, we've tried to create some kind of image that basically exemplifies who and what we're all about. Because the image tells a story. And then stories are then tied to strong emotional experiences, which is exactly what we want our athletes to have here. We want them to have a powerful emotional experience when they're with us and when they're together, which then, again, continues to build that camaraderie. And so when they look at this image, number one, you'll see the bear is a representation of the Bruins. The skull is a representation of our warrior mindset and homage to our warrior community, the Navy SEALs, the Force Reconnaissance Marines, the Army Rangers that have been great to us and taught us so much over the years. The eight is a representation of our eight warrior virtues that we share with our players. The triangle on the back actually has two different meanings. One, it's an homage to Coach Wooden and his performance pyramid, which is so instrumental in so many different coaches and really groundbreaking. But it's also the chemical symbol for change. So when athletes come to us, they change through the means. They change through speed training, which is the sprinter on the side, weight training, the strength development, the barbell, the mindset, which is exemplified by the skull, And then at the bottom there, you couldn't see it in this image because the TV cuts it off, but it says Et Presidia Somnia on it, which means protectors of dreams. So the athletes come to us with dreams of earning scholarships if they're walk-ons. They come to us with dreams of going on to the NFL. All of our guys want to play in the NFL someday. They have dreams of wanting to be CEOs of companies, successful businessmen, whatever it is. But we protect those dreams. We spend more time with the athletes than anybody, and we want to nurture our guys and give them the tools that are necessary for them to be successful, not only the 4 years or 5 years they're with us, but the rest of their lives. And that's something that me and my staff are very passionate about. And that image is an earned image. Not everybody gets it, but if you get to put that on your breastplate, if you get to put that on your hat, if you get to put that on your wrist, it's very meaningful for our players. And so they walk around with it with a lot of pride.
Awesome. This has been a really cool day here at UCLA. So if you like the Jug Life, go on iTunes, give us a 5-star review, write us something funny or nice. We always appreciate that. Subscribe to YouTube, at least 3 new videos a week, thanks to the world's strongest videographer, Shorty Sedang. And if you're interested in coaching for powerlifting, weightlifting, super total, strongman, or power building, you can visit juggernautcoaching.com. We have levels for our programs of all levels, from beginner athletes to people trying to break world records and get on world teams. Frank, thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah, it's great to have you. Thanks for coming. Thanks.
Is there somewhere where they can follow UCLA strength and conditioning or anything?
Yeah, we have a Twitter page and an Instagram page, and I have no idea what those are. So I'll get them to you, and then we can put those out. But yeah, we've got some stuff on Instagram. We've got some stuff on Twitter, and
awesome.
Very cool. You can find me on Instagram or Facebook, max_Ada, or email me max@jtsstrength.com.
And I'm Chad Wesley Smith, at Chad Wesley Smith and at Juggernaut Training on Facebook and Instagram. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next week.